Let's play some cards.
From Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel, this is The Final Table, starring professional poker player Dennis Phillips and Paul Harrah's.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner!
Wow, winning.
Now, from the Harrah's St. Louis Poker Room, here are Dennis and Paul on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com.
Coming up on the show today, one of the newest members of the Poker Hall of Fame, Barry Greenstein, will join us on the show. Also coming up, the man who spent most of last weekend calling an epic long marathon November 9 finale for the World Series of Poker main event, Lon McCarron of ESPN, coming up in just a few minutes here on The Final Table. Hello, I am Paul Harrah, sitting at the feature table of the Harrah's St. Louis Poker Room. All my partner, Dennis Phillips, is back home in Las Vegas. Hi, Dennis, how are you?
I'm doing quite well, fully recovered, ready to play some poker.
Yeah, but before we talk about where you've been recently and get to the other issues of the day, I was up at the Horseshoe Hammond this weekend. You remember I was there last month for the first week of the circuit event there, and you were there for the second week, which, of course, is when your appendix exploded and you had to have the emergency surgery. I looked around for the plaque with your appendix having been removed. They don't have it in the poker room. Where in the casino are they keeping that? Do you know?
Hopefully hidden in a drawer somewhere.
The man who exchanged his appendix for a ring. That's what it should say. But I had a great time. Didn't go up there for any tournaments. Just played some cash games, some 510 PLO and 510 No Limit Hold'em, and had a great weekend up there. And speaking of the weekend, you have been running around. For a guy who's only 3 weeks out of surgery, I think you're insane. Where have you been?
Well, I actually left Vegas on Friday night at 1 a.m., took the red eye through Chicago and into Boston, got into Boston at about 11:30 the next morning. A couple of quick meetings out there for some stuff, and then at 4 in the afternoon, I helped host a charity tournament that was put on by the Eastern Poker League by Bernard Lee. We raised some nice funds, had a good time, played a little bit of poker, and, you know, it's all for a good cause. It was an interesting one. It's a charity that he was helping there that benefits kids and their sports programs. And the unique thing they did for the sign-in is I think you got 10,000 in starting chips. I might have the numbers a little wrong here, but you got an extra 5,000 in starting chips if you bought some sort of an athletic ball, a football, a basketball, a softball, or whatever with you. So they ended up gathering 200 or 300 of these extra balls they're going to be able to use to hand out to the kids, plus raised a decent amount of money for it, plus we had a lot of fun.
Nice.
Yeah,
nice.
It was excellent. Then I got to bed about 12:30, 1 o'clock, up at 5:45, and back on another plane.
and right back to Vegas on Sunday, huh?
I did, yeah.
Plus, I know that in the last week you also have dipped your toe into the Venetian's Deep Stack event.
I played one event there. I got back here in time. I ran down and played one other event. It was one of the smaller ones. It was a $340 buy-in. About 340 people were involved in it, and I did make the final table. I finished sixth. It was kind of interesting because Barry Shulman, who's a very good card player, I started out with him, and then we broke apart, and then we came back together again, and I played for a number of hours with him, sitting on my left, which is never a pleasant experience.
Yeah.
Barry's a good card player and can be fairly aggressive, and it was fun playing with him to my left.
Barry, of course, won the World Series of Poker Europe event last year, and his son Nick made the final table of the Las Vegas main event last year, and the Shulman's own Card Player magazine. So you had plenty to talk about with Barry.
We did. We talked about a ton of different things. Card Player is also sponsoring a brand new poker tour that's going to start out down in Chickasha, Oklahoma in December down there. Kenny Lambert's helped him post it at Duran, Oklahoma. And we'll see how that is. It's the Native American Casino Tour, I believe is the way the proper title for it. But I absolutely guarantee you do not have to be a Native American to play.
Uh-huh.
And hey, I had one hand that I got a challenge to the listeners on this one, because I cannot for the life of me figure out what the odds on this happening are. but it has to be astronomical. One of the guys at the table, one of the mathematical guys, says that he doubts in the history of cards if that's ever been dealt more than two or three times. Just phenomenal odds on that one.
Wow. What was the hand?
Well, we're down to 18 people. We're down to 16 people left in the tournament, to two tables of eight. So there's eight at the table. I was under the gun plus one, looked down at a pair of nines. Blinds were 3 and 6. I made it 15,000. Guy to my left jumps it to 30,000. Guy directly across from me goes into the tank and thinks, and he only has a little over 70,000 in front of him, and finally just mucks the cards and pushes them out there. Wanting to call, knowing he's short stack, but just can't quite pull it because of the re-raise. Goes to the button, who shoves for 170,000. Makes it a rather easy fold for my nines, because I got the guy to my left has probably close to 300,000. I have about 400,000. If I call the 170 and then the guy behind me also shoves, I'm going to be forced to call him. And pocket nines right there. At best, at the absolute best, I'm racing against these two guys.
Yeah.
So, it's an easy muck. No big deal, right?
Yep.
Well, the guy does shove behind me. It turns out he has kings. The other guy has aces. The guy who tanked, gets a big smile on his face and says, "You won't believe this. In my short stack, I had pocket eights, and I was able to muck them."
Wow.
I said, "Well, I had pocket nine." So eight people at the table, four of us had pairs.
Okay.
Nines, kings, and aces.
Well, that's not a big deal. That's not a mathematical impossibility. It happens every day.
Okay, well, to continue, flop comes out, king, ace, nine.
Oh, man. Set over set over your folded set.
Correct. And had the hand played out different, had we bet in a different order, I could have easily had all my chips in there. Or, if I didn't pre-flop, then with a nine coming, it's going to be almost impossible for me to get away from it. Perhaps,
yeah,
I could have, but would have been extremely difficult.
Yep.
So we're all laughing and joking about the three sets out there. Turn card comes, an eight.
Wow. Wow.
Never in all of my playing have I ever seen set over set over set over set. And again, we had declared our hands pre-flop, declared it long before we saw these. I showed the nines. I did not see the eights. There's no reason for this guy to have lied about it. And
yeah,
he was the one that volunteered the information ahead of time.
Right.
So I have no doubt but what he did have the eights. And when that eight came, we're laughing. It's like, you've got to be kidding me. Oh, we all dodged these bullets and everything like that. And the guy with the king says, I didn't. And then guess what comes on the river?
No. The case,
yes,
king?
The case king. So each of us caught two outers. At the two outer, a two outer, a two outer, and a two outer, and then a one outer.
Wow.
It was so amazing. The guy who had the kings, his name is David Bonadio. Bonadio. He actually took a picture of it and forwarded it to me. We probably ought to post that thing on the webpage or something like that. But I have absolutely no idea how to figure up what the odds on that happening would be. Amazing.
I have no idea whatsoever. It got to be under 5%, under 2%, under 1%,
Oh, no. You aren't even close. To be honest, it's got to be in the millions to one.
Got to be.
I've never seen it before. The dealer who was dealing for 22 years before the river card came said, I've never seen set over set over set over set before. 22 years of dealing, I've never, ever seen it.
Now, I have seen set over set over set with three guys who got it all in, and the flop came out just like that, something like that.
Right.
And, the hand played out. But I've never seen it with four players with pairs catching their two outer on the board.
And I've seen it very rarely. I would say probably less than half a dozen times, the set over set over set. And I've never seen anybody catch a quad on that particular flop.
Yeah.
So that in itself would have been amazing. But to catch the fourth set and then to catch the one outer on the river. Of course, now you got to, when else would you have a 4% chance of somebody catching quads, which is what you had?
Right.
You had four different cards that could have done it. That's an 8% chance to catch quads on the river.
Wow. Wow. That's a great hand. Yeah, send me the picture, and we'll definitely put it up on the blog that accompanies the show. That's a great story.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. I told you we have two guests on the show today. Let's bring in our first one. It's Lon McCarron, who has been doing the ESPN coverage of the main event of the World Series of Poker for many years now. This year, got to do it in a very different way in what we referred to as the near-live coverage with hole cards. On a 15-minute delay, they showed every hand. Sunday of last weekend, when they got the November 9 started, they played out on ESPN, and Lon was there for hour after hour after hour after hour. When it got a little bit late, he got replaced in the booth by David Tuckman. I'm guessing Lon had to go off and have some warm beverages and a lozenge at that point, so David picked up for the few hours until they finally got Matt Giannetti eliminated and got down to the final three. But Lon was back in there with Norman Chad and Antonio Esfandiari to call the finale on Tuesday night on ESPN. And we're happy to welcome him back to the final table to talk about that whole experience. Hi, Lon. How are you?
I'm very good. How are you gentlemen doing out there today?
Well, we're enjoying life, but that had to be a heck of an experience. How do you feel hour after hour after hour of guys sitting at the table, you know, taking 30 or 60 seconds to make a move?
Yeah, that's the tough part, you know. That's what we've been talking about for years, is what do we do if we have to call this game live? Luckily, I had Antonio with me, I had Norman with me, and just kind of split up the duties, you know, and you go in as prepared as possible, and you go in trying to think of, you know, 100 different things that, you know, you might talk about and hope you don't have to use any. But if you get away with 50% of your notes, I think you're doing pretty well. But, yeah, just trying to keep it interesting, keep it light, keep people informed. We have such a wide variety of people out there that I thought were tuning in to the show that we had to cover a lot of bases.
Lon, I have to disagree with Dennis. As a lifelong broadcaster myself, I know for a fact that that's not the most difficult part of what you did. For 6 hours on the air, plus having to be there beforehand, I know that the most difficult part was controlling your liquid intake, because you had to sit there and not have a bladder emergency.
Well, that's funny you say that. I mean, my wife asked me that when we were done. She says, did you get a break to go to the bathroom? And I said, I did not.
No.
I mean, the other guys did. I thought we were going to have, you know, during the breaks, we'd have somebody come in and fill time and all this, but no, from minute one to minute last, I was in that chair.
next year, Lon's coverage brought to you by the makers of catheters.
And that's the truth. And that's funny, because I growing up, I'd read a lot of different books about sportscasters, Red Barber and Jim McCann and everything, and that is mentioned in almost every sportscaster book that you can find early on. Is you go to the bathroom before you go on the air, whether you have to go or not. This is like a mother would tell you before you go to school.
All right, now a serious question.
We spent way too much time on that, though.
That's all right. We talked to Ty Stewart, the executive director of the WSOP, a few weeks ago, and I asked him if there was going to be an edited version of this that will air through the rest of the year, because that's such an important part of the exposure of the WSOP main event on ESPN. And he said, absolutely. So have you started doing that yet?
We finished doing it. We did it all yesterday, matter of fact. I just got back in from Los Angeles late last night, and it was an exhausting process for everyone, just due to the turnaround, and we got it done, and I think it airs next Tuesday, if I'm not mistaken. I never did hear the schedule, just that we had to turn around to get it done quick, so it's possible it airs next Tuesday, but don't hold me to that. But we're all done with it, yeah.
Well, congratulations, and enjoy your break.
Well, we're not done yet. We still have 6 hours of World Series of Poker Europe to do, and we start that process next Monday.
Wow.
Are there any...
Yeah, it never ends, and that's fine.
Yeah,
you know, work is good.
Can we expect anything different in this edited version versus what we've seen over the last few years? Because of it being shown ahead of time, because of all the hole cards, all the hands, everything like that?
That was a big concern of the producers as far as seeing anything different. I don't think so, Dennis. You know, we struggled, the producers, I should say, struggled, and there were some struggling moments in the booth on continuity, and because with the Poker Productions, it's the first time they've had the World Series and had to go from X number of hands, 200 or whatever, down to, you know, 25 or so hands for 2 hours. And those guys, as you know, are very poker-centric. They hold the game near and dear to their heart, as 441 did as well. But it was a real struggle for them in the first year is to decide what to throw out. I mean, there's so many good hands. You get into a six-hour heads-up, and it's you know, you feel it's an impossible task. And I think they just start with you have to show all the knockouts. So there's eight hands right there, and the final hand, of course, in the pomp and circumstance. And you just kind of work backwards from there and try to fill the gaps, create a bridge from one hand to another that makes sense. And so it's a very difficult puzzle to put together, but I don't think anything new you're going to see this time around. Just exciting Lon and Norm.
What went through your mind when Ben Lamb shoves on the first hand Tuesday night in the small blind and Stashko thinks for a few seconds and calls?
I thought, I can go to the bathroom in 10 minutes. You know? No. Yeah, but no, there was some obviously excitement. Obviously, what the heck's going on? And then even in my 360 world, I'm thinking, you know, boy, ESPN's going to have a lot of time to fill tonight. No, it was shocking. And I think, you know, we did think it was going to be down early. Again, it wasn't going to be up to us to fill 5 hours, so I wasn't worried there. But, yeah, we all thought it's just one of those nights. It's going to go quickly. And we've learned over the years, whenever you think that, poker has a way to slap you down. And most shocked, I think, that Stashko called. I really was impressed with the way he kind of, you know, came out of his shell, changed his spots a little bit. Late at the final table and made some calls and some moves that maybe we didn't expect from him. So it was exciting and unexpected all around.
You know, Dennis, you and I haven't had a chance to talk about this yet. What did you think of that hand, the way both guys played it, and were you surprised that it all got in on the first hand?
Absolutely flabbergasted, especially when I saw both of their hands. I mean, granted, three-handed, those are premium hands. I will admit that. There is no way in the world from his previous play, from his reputation, from his demeanor, from everything else, that I would have thought he would have called with a middle pair there. I was absolutely flabbergasted when he turned over those sevens. It just amazed. Because at that stage, you're hoping for a race. I mean, even if he did it extremely weak with an ace-eight or something like that, or a king nine, anything like that, it's still just a race. I was absolutely amazed he made that call.
Do you think?
I kind of thought that Ben may have been a little surprised as well. He seemed very upbeat going back to his rail, saying, "Hey, I'm racing," and they're racing for 89 million chips or whatever it was. I don't know, but I was surprised how upbeat Ben was after it came out of what he was up against. But I don't know. I haven't talked to him about it, but he seemed, I sense that he was surprised that Stashko made that call as well.
Well, he absolutely was, and when he made the call, his heart sank down to about his big toe, because he was under the assumption that he just ran into a premium hand and he was totally dominated. When he saw the smaller pair and that he was racing, he was then very upbeat, because that's the best he could have hoped for. He was afraid ace-king or pocket-kings or who knows what. When he made the call, it's like, oh, I am so much trouble here. He loved the idea it was a race.
Do you think, I'll ask both of you, do you think that Stashko decided to make a stand with his sevens there because he thought, I'm not going to let these two 20-somethings push me around like they've been doing the rest of the table the last week of the tournament? The last few days, I guess, of the tournament?
I don't know. I'm thinking that he did change his, like I said, he changed his style just because, you know, he had a day off from the beginning of the table to the three-handed table, and maybe he knew he was going to have to change things up. Obviously, he had seen Ben, you know, played with Ben for several hours and knew Ben was capable of anything. So I'm guessing, yeah, it was just the overall situation, his chip count, where the blinds were going, an opportunity. I don't know, Dennis, just a lot of factors play into that, I guess.
Absolutely does, and I think it goes even a little further than that. I would guess that people had a heart-to-heart talk with him during the day off, and they said, look, you're going against two guys that are more aggressive than you, and the shorter the table, the more aggressive play is what is needed, is what's preferred, and is what usually wins. So you're going to be out of your element a little bit. If you think you can get it in there and get it in on a race or even have a chance of catching for a bluff, get your chips in there. You're in third place. You're the short stack. Get them in there. And he looks down at sevens and goes, this is exactly what they're talking about. I mean, that, truthfully, they had more experience. They were more aggressive. They were more used to heads up and playing three-handed. I guarantee Ben Lamb was. If I'm Stachko from his playing and I'm going to have to be out of my comfort zone and I can get it in there when it could easily be a major bluff by Ben Lamb that he doesn't think I'll call, I'll put my chips in.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, gunning out of your comfort zone is easy to say, but when you're in a situation like that, does it...
Exactly.
That's a hard thing to do, isn't it?
Very, very, very hard to do. He's playing a game that he's not familiar with, not used to, and not comfortable with. And, if he can get in there, and then if he wins that, if he loses, nobody's going to complain. He put it in with a good hand. If he wins it, all of a sudden he's got, you know, a 40-60 underdog, but he's still got a decent amount of chips. Boom. There's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. I think it goes back to that old, you know what, if I go out here, I'm the guy who was expected to go out here. But if I come in second or win this thing, I'm the surprise story. And maybe that was part of his thinking in going into this. I don't know. This is the Final Table Poker Radio Show. I'm Paul Harris in St. Louis with Dennis Phillips in Las Vegas and our guest Lon McCarron, the voice of the World Series of Poker on ESPN, who last week did yeoman's work, hour after hour after hour of live or near live coverage of the November 9 finale. On Sunday, we didn't get to hear the players talking at the table very much. I know they were all mic'd, but we didn't get to hear them, you and Antonio and Phil or Vanessa or whoever else you had in the booth with you were filling all the time, but we didn't get to hear a lot of the table chatter. And ironically, when you got down to the final two, you ended up with two guys who played essentially a silent game. Talk to me about the dynamic there and the choices in not letting us hear more of the audio of the players on Sunday.
I didn't know that. You know, it wasn't a conscious decision as far as I know, but I know that they love the table talk, so I don't know if it was something in the mix that it didn't come through during the live broadcast, or what, but, I also know there's not a lot of talk amongst those guys, so, that's something I'll look into, but I have not heard, too much about that at all.
But how much harder did it make your job on Tuesday night with two guys who didn't say a word to each other?
Yeah, well, that is definitely it's not a dream scenario. I mean, we kind of knew that going in. Stachko, we'd seen both of them for a long time, and Pius Hines' main foil was Ben Lamb. They did become friends over the course of time. At the final table and even before, so they were talking a lot, as you could see, even when Stachko at risk, Hines and Lamb were talking to each other earlier when it was four-handed, I think, and so it was just the dynamic between those two. Stachko didn't speak much English. He's uncomfortable speaking English, so we kind of knew that going in, and it was going to have to be a chat fest from the announcers.
Somebody took you aside and said, it's on you, Lon!
Yeah, it's kind of unwritten, you know. You just know that once you're in that seat that if it's starting to drag, you know, you're the one that's got to pull the cart.
I got a little bit of a different question. This is the first year in showing the whole cards and only the 15-minute delay. You had Antonio and there and Phil and Vanessa. And by the way, Antonio, I thought, did an absolutely superb job in there.
He's easy to work with. He's a lot of fun to go with, yeah.
I was very pleased. Did you guys talk a little ahead of time? I mean, you could see that he's, you know, saying what range of hands, what possible move he might make, everything like that. Did you talk anything about picking up the tells on players, about saying that something might be a weak move or a strong move, or did you guys specifically avoid doing anything like that might be parlayed back to the table?
There was, some concern of that. You're right. We had to have some limits on what we were saying because you know, all players might not be using the 15-minute delay the same way. We didn't want to go out on a limb and point out tells, you know, some players. There was some discussion on and exactly what we would want Antono to divulge if he picked up on it, particularly because he could be misleading people, he could be wrong. I mean, all we're doing is speculating in the booth anyway, and we certainly don't want to lead any people astray, have any more effect on the game than we have now already. There was some concern on that, and we tried to limit that as well.
Yeah, I would think that the ethics question has to come into play there, because you know with the 15-minute delay, you can have a direct effect on what's going on there. Although, I guess one of the differences with the heads-up play is, you know, when you got a full ring, a guy who's not involved in a hand could go over to the rail, and a hand might take 2 or 3 minutes, and he can have a discussion with his friends and his supporters and his coaches. In heads-up, you're playing every hand, so they didn't really have that opportunity, did they?
No, they didn't, and Pia Sainz talked about that, and he had some people there, and if we were, you know, during the level breaks, even those were a little shorter than normal. But he said, I'm involved in every hand. There's no real chance to get away. And as we got into the night, we weren't required to take TV commercial breaks after a certain hour. So we limited ours to, I think, maybe one per hour instead of four per hour. So it just forced them to stay at the table. Stashko said he was really not taking advantage of having a team of people watching the broadcast and getting back to him just the way he decided to go. Different strategies. As long as the opportunity presents itself on a level playing field and all players have the opportunity to do the same type of research, then we hope that, we can move forward with this.
Well, now that you've got a year under your belt, do you see any other ways that you're going to, are you going to continue the same thing next year, do you think? Do you see a way maybe to twist it a little bit, improve it? Something that didn't go as smooth as you wanted? I'm wondering what
I thought the final table was much easier to do because, of course, we knew who everybody was, all the players were, and we had backstories on them. During the summer, you just plug in players in, and you don't have much background on them at all. So hopefully we've already talked to Ty and the folks at the World Series as far as getting information on the players. And I think next year the players may be, as they register, may have to fill out some sort of profile form initially just so we have some basic information on them. So everyone who registers, there's going to be, something in a file somewhere that we're going to know who they are. So that's one. Just research is one thing. And I'm sure they'd like to get more real-time numbers up there just to flesh out the statistics and maybe more from the floor. I'd love to see more from Kara Scott and talking to people in the audience. But this was, again, the first year. I think we set a great foundation for it. And now, ESPN and Caesars and Advisory Board and Nevada Gaming Commission and everyone has to get together and decide where to go from here, what the timing is. Nothing is being ruled out as far as, when we're going to do this next year, how we're going to do it, etc.
Put me down for a vote in the More Kara Scott column.
No kidding.
By the way, I talked before about how good you were as a broadcaster. I know that when you were throwing it to her to do her little interstitials there, she was doing those live as well. Those were not pre-produced, right?
You are correct. Yeah, she is a real pro. I mean, she knows the game. She's very well spoken. Of course, the players love talking to her, so that makes a good trifecta there.
Well, listen, Lon, we always appreciate your time today. Congratulations on a really, really successful, unique television event. I think you did a great job. Norman did a good job in the booth there. Antonio, Kara, Maury and his team and everybody. And really, I think, changed the way we're going to be watching poker on TV in the near future. And we appreciate you spending some time with us here today.
Oh, happy always to join you guys. Again, we're always thinking about, the aftermath away from poker, the aftermath of all the storms and everything last year, and hope the recovery there is going great. And then you got a nice uplift with the Cardinals, too, so congratulations there.
Thank you very much.
I love it.
Lon McCarron, the play-by-play voice of the World Series of Poker on ESPN, joining us here at the final table. With Dennis Phillips in Las Vegas, I'm Paul Harris in the poker room of Harris St. Louis on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com. Our podcasts are available via iTunes and on thechipleader.com.
Kids, are you caught up in that old game of shuffling your debt around and hoping you'll get lucky and win the jackpot? Well, it's time to deal. Mortgage rates are low and savings are high. So stop bluffing and call 800-GRANNY-8 or go to granny8.com. You bet our friendly loan officers make it easy, and we don't have an application fee. So call 800-GRANNY-8 and you'll be holding all the aces.
Great mortgage rates, call 800-GRANNY-8.
granny8.com.
This is the Final Table Poker Radio Show, brought to you by Harrah's St. Louis. I'm Paul Harris, sitting at table two in the Harrah's St. Louis Poker Room. Dennis Phillips is in Las Vegas. This Saturday at Harrah's St. Louis, it's another $10,000 shootout for just a $200 buy-in. It's a double shootout. You beat your table, you go to the final table, you win that, you get the $10,000 guarantee. There'll be a 50-person flight at noon, a 50-person flight at 3 p.m., and the final table in the evening. You can sign up for it any time this week and play this Saturday to win $10,000. And then, just a little over 2 weeks from now, it's the debut of the Harrah's St. Louis Gateway Poker Classic, December 1st through December 11th. A series of poker tournaments going on each and every day, three a day. You've got No Limit Hold'em, you've got Pot Limit Omaha, you've got PLO 8, you've got Horse, you've got Six Max, you've got a senior event and a ladies event and a Jack and Jill event. It's 11 days of poker tournaments that'll be bringing people in from all over the region to play. You can already sign up for those here in the Harrah's Poker Room and come join us. And, of course, in addition to all the tournaments, we'll have lots of great live cash game action as well. For more information, all you have to do is like Harrah's St. Louis Poker Room on Facebook or go to harrahsstlewis.com. All right, time for our second guest of the day. Dennis, you introduce him.
This is such a hard introduction and such an easy one. I mean, it's Barry Greenstein. You could talk for 15 minutes about him and still not cover everything and throw it all out there. But the basic facts: over 120 caches, over $7.5 million in winnings, three different bracelets, the Robin Hood of poker, the guy that everybody respects and everybody wants to listen to. When Barry speaks, people listen. I don't know how much better you can introduce a guy like this. Doyle Bronson spent 5 minutes introducing him at the Hall of Fame introduction, which unfortunately I was sitting 5 feet behind him and couldn't hear a word of it with the acoustics in the stage there.
Oh.
But, yeah, it really was bad because we're all up there straining and we can't understand what's going on. All the mics were pointed out away from us. But Barry is one of the most respected by me and by every other poker pro around. I am honored to have Barry here. And I'm telling you, when you look down the list for the new inductees or for the nominees for the World Series, for the, Poker Hall of Fame, you said, okay, Barry's getting in. Now who else is on the list? Because Barry was an automatic. That's all I can say. Barry, welcome to the show.
Hey, Dennis. Thanks a lot for all that.
Well, it's the truth. It makes it easy to say.
You said that thing about Doyle's introduction. I had a whole thing ready to say after Doyle introduced me. But like you, I was sitting behind him. I didn't hear a word he said. But I had this whole thing ready. I even had it, usually you write your speech, you glance at it. So at the top, because I wanted to remember to thank Doyle for presenting me, I guess is the word you use. So what I was going to say is, I asked Doyle to be my presenter because, his memory is failing him in his older years, and I know how he likes to exaggerate. You didn't hear me say that because, for all I know, he said, I don't know how Barry got in the Hall of Fame. I didn't hear if he did exaggerate or what good stuff he said. So I just had to say thanks.
You know what's sad about this is the three of us are doing this discussion here. None of us heard what Doyle said, and two of us didn't hear what you said because, Barry, I wasn't there, and it's not online. There's no YouTube video of it.
It will be. Well, there's about to be today.
Okay, good.
The Vonger, who's our key guy at Poker Road, ever since Tronc left us,
yes,
really taking over. I couldn't believe it. He just showed it to me today. He videoed it in high definition. You know, he had a high definition camera, did a great job. And then what he did, because you could hear it kind of well, he was out in front of me. If you were in front of the speakers, you could hear it. If you were behind, there was like this big echo. So when I was speaking, I wasn't even totally sure people were hearing what I was saying. But anyway, he got a good video of it, and he put subtitles under it. Well, you'll see it. It'll be on Poker Road and on YouTube, so it'll be up sometime during the day. And actually, I was amazed. I mean, I told him, I said, I don't know how good a job I did with the speech, but you did a great job with the video. it was really impressive, the job he did. And
well,
he would stand out in front and held the camera real still without any kind of, you know, tripod or anything like that. He did a great job, I thought.
Well, later on today, when I post the podcast of this show, I'll be sure to include a link to the YouTube and Poker Road links for the video so that our listeners can see it. And Dennis can finally hear what you said, and so can I.
Exactly. And that's exactly what I was thinking. All these people are saying, hey, I hope you gave a good speech. I really couldn't hear it. Finally, they'll be able to hear what I said.
Nice.
All right. You've got another thing coming up here, the United States Poker Federation. Not real familiar with it. I've been reading up on it lately. It sounds extremely interesting. Can you kind of give us a background as to what this is and how it's going to develop over there in London?
Yeah, I'm not sure, even though I'm the captain of the American team, what it means to be part of the United States Federation of Poker. I have a contact guy, Peter Alston, who's a guy who co-wrote the Stewie Unger book with Nolan Dalla, and that we're playing in an event that's hosted by the International Federation of Poker, which I also don't know what that is, except I do know that Anthony Holden, who wrote the Big Deal and the Bigger Deal, is the president of that. But anyway, it's going to be in London, where they're going to have us sit at, have you ever, I don't know where people have been in London, they have this thing that they built, I don't know, they didn't build it. I guess they're having the Olympics this year, so it wouldn't have been built for the Olympics. I don't know what it was built for. But anyway, this thing they call the Eye of London, which is essentially a big Ferris wheel where you can see, you know, you overlook a lot of things in London. I think it's on the banks of the River Thames, if I remember. Anyway, you go around in this Ferris wheel type thing, and you play poker. And the thing that they're promoting is poker as a mind sport. And the other mind sports are like chess and bridge and a few others. And the nice thing to get us poker players to go over there is some Japanese company, I think it's Dan Su, if I'm not mistaken, is putting up $500,000 per free roll for the players. So that's what, you know, is some extra incentive for us to play in this thing. But there are 12 teams representing 12 different countries, and the United States is one of them, and I know Canada's one, England's the host country. And I think as a trick quiz, the most populous team out of those 12 is not a real country but has more people in it than any other, and that's the country of Zynga.
I heard about this. For our listeners who don't know, Zynga Poker is probably the most popular free poker site because it's on Facebook and has millions of people who play it in America in this post-Black Friday environment, and I guess maybe they were playing it before. They actually have a team. They're going to go up against you and Brazil and Canada and Germany and France and the UK?
Exactly. And, it's certainly a smart move by this International Federation of Poker because they're hoping, I think, to eventually have this duplicate poker. You know, I know this was tried once before as an online site, maybe have some sort of other competition. So you're going to partner up with someone, you know, everybody, including Poker Stars, who I represent, you know, Black Friday, everybody talks to Zynga and takes them very seriously because when you have that many people on a site like Facebook, you certainly, you know, if you're going to get involved with social media, that's where you go.
So are the team members from the Zynga anybody we would know versus obviously your team is, a team of superstars. Who are going to be representing that
one? Well, I don't know really who's on the other teams. They haven't given us a list of the members of the other teams. The only way I even have noticed some of the people is, you know, I've been getting emails for the last few months about, you know, just about the rules and all these different things. So once in a while in the email stream, even though I haven't, like, gone over carefully to see, but I'll see names of people. And, like, for instance, I think Daniel's the captain of the Canadian team, and I know there's Barney Boatman's name on the English team, stuff like that. But I don't even know who's on some of these other teams, and I don't know who's on Zynga. I don't know if they got there by winning the most play money on Zynga or how they got there. But, you know, I would assume they probably had a contest and these people qualified in some way.
Barry, while we're speaking about online poker, I've got to ask you about a development just yesterday in which one of the newspapers in Las Vegas reported that the state of Nevada is going to begin taking applications in February for licenses for intrastate online poker. We've heard about this in various states around the country. Nevada is going that route first. They are going to probably make it easiest for the brick-and-mortar companies that already exist and are licensed in Nevada to become licensed as well for online poker, almost like an addendum to their existing gambling license. And then, I guess, online companies or anybody who's not in Nevada now who wants to try to get into the state would have to apply and go through some sort of vetting process. What are your thoughts on all of that?
Well, you know, when you first see that, you say, hey, well, that's a good idea. But the problem is, and I'm not saying it's not a good idea, the problem still is it'll be for Nevada residents. You're not going to be able to play against people from all around the world. The beauty of online poker was the volume that was created by being able to play online and have people play from all over the world. So it allowed you to have games going all the time. And we've seen this before. If you limit the field, now, you know, you go to a site that looks a little bit empty, you know, and you go there and there's just not a game for you to play in. So I think it's a smart move on Nevada's part to get it kind of going. You know, I don't know that it's going to be that successful in and of its own, but I think what they're thinking long term, let's get things going, let's get some sites up. They would like to be the lead state as far as online poker is concerned, which is a natural for them since they, you know, obviously are a lead state as far as gambling in general is concerned, and, you know, one of the top two, probably California's bigger state as far as poker. But, you know, those were the two states that you would have figured would be the first to do something like this. You know, it's been discussed in California, and, you know, I wouldn't be surprised to have it discussed, to have it the same type of legislation get passed in California. You know, but as a poker player, you know, what we're all really hoping, you know, I think we've always been aware that this was a states' right issue because we've seen some of the states make laws against online poker. You know, we saw Washington State, there was stuff in Kentucky. Of course, it was all pretty hypocritical. The reason that they made their anti-online poker laws was because they had other gambling ventures that they were hoping would do better.
Yeah.
You know, in Kentucky was the horse racing, and Washington State was Native American casinos. But anyway, you know, what I think most of us are really hoping for is that a federal law comes down that, you know, legalizes and starts regulating online poker. And if that happens, it probably will make these types of things moot because people are going to want to compete on a federal, you know, on a total country basis where you can get a bigger, you know, a bigger pool of players, and ultimately where you can open it up to the rest of the world.
But you like this at least as a foot in the door?
It's a smart move on their part. You know, I think that it probably should have happened in 2006 when the UIGA came out. You know, because I think legally they always could have done this, and you know why? And you know, we've certainly talked to the representatives in Nevada, and they've always said they wanted to be the lead state. I mean, this is, you know, what they're thinking of course, is not only the income, but the jobs that would be generated by the legalization of online poker. You get some of these companies to have their home base in Nevada instead of in places like, you know, Isle of Man, London, you know, Antigua, Costa Rica, all these other places where are. These are companies that are mainly serving, you know, Americans make up between, you know, used to be 75%, maybe now it's down to 50%. But still, the number one country that plays poker online is the United States. So it's really, yeah, I've always been disappointed in our politicians that they don't say, hey, all this money is being spent by Americans because, you know, it's such, poker is such a big game in the United States. We need to have the people who work at these companies be Americans. You know, so it's not just revenue for the states and for the government. It's for people. We talk about people not having jobs. Here's like, an easy way to create a lot of jobs.
Barry's absolutely right on so many points there. The couple of little things I might add to it. The legislation that they're putting forth in Nevada and what they're trying to get approved actually has some subparagraphs in it that nothing's going to be implemented until they receive approval on the federal level. So while they're trying to get Nevada set up and they're trying to get to be ahead of the pack, exactly what Barry was saying, nothing's going to be implemented and done, even if you apply for a license. That doesn't mean you can do anything here until something happens on the federal level. And what Nevada is worried about, again, is something that Barry touched upon. Your big states, California or Florida or whatever, that have such a bigger population to draw from, may be able to sustain within the borders of the state a viable online presence. But Nevada and other states that are doing it now, like Iowa and even Massachusetts, are not going to be able to carry and have the volume of people that are residing in the state that they can do it just for the one state. So Nevada's trying to get the jump and get involved there.
Yeah, I can see Rhode Island, everybody in the state who wants to play gets on there and it's a six max game.
Yeah. Well, I hope you don't have too many Rhode Island listeners. They don't like those small jokes. You know? Size doesn't matter in Rhode Island.
Barry, while we're talking about online poker, I'm interested in your thoughts on the developments or non-developments with Full Tilt Poker, and I know you know all of the principals involved there. I wonder if you've talked to any of them, including Phil Ivey, who you tweeted about a screaming session that you had to talk Phil down from a few months ago. Have you spoken to any of these guys, and if so, what are they telling you?
Well, yeah, you know, everybody involved, obviously the number one thing in, I guess we call it a fiasco or whatever happened, you know, the people who represent the company, a lot of times, those are the messengers, and so it's a little disappointing that people are going off on them. Obviously, they want to see the players get their money however it's going to happen. You know, there are issues about, you know, where did they get the money the last few months because the company wasn't solvent, all those things. But, you know, it's all working itself out with the TAFE stuff and all that. And, I have several friends who are, who are representatives of the company, but obviously I know lots of people who have money tied up there. And, we don't want to see people lose their money, and, you know, we're all still hopeful that may still take some more time, but that people will get the money that they're due.
Well, we're all hoping for that, of course. There's still so many questions up in the air and how they're going to do this and what the DOJ's position is. I am hoping that the DOJ's position is let's get the money back to the players and worry about the prosecution and fines and everything afterwards.
I think one nice thing is that the statements coming out from the DOJ, they've made statements about that it is a priority of theirs also to get money back to the players. And the reason that's important is because sometimes in this type of stuff, it becomes so political. Well, you never know. The DOJ can say, oh, well, these people were doing criminal things, playing poker online, and they don't even deserve their money back. But they're realizing that it'd be such a stupid position to take politically because millions and millions of people play poker and play poker online. And so I think the DOJ is, from what I see, gets it that these are American citizens who, you know, should have their money back and not people who were involved in some criminal enterprise. It actually kind of reminds me in the 1970s, the police in, it was Monticello, Illinois, actually. What happened is someone was speeding going to the poker game. A friend of mine who now lives in Las Vegas, he was a lawyer, and he was speeding because he was late to the poker game, didn't want to lose his seat. And the police couldn't even keep up with him. He was driving so fast, but eventually they found his car parked at this house, and there were all these expensive cars there. And so they're thinking, you know, they didn't know what it was, drug bust, whatever, you know. Well, they staked out, and they found out we played, like, every Tuesday. I can't remember, maybe Tuesday and Thursday or whatever we played in those days. And they eventually figured out, or, you know, maybe asked people to find out it was a poker game. And they busted the poker game. They came in. You know, I wrote about my book. It was, like, one of the, I think there was one other time, I had to look down a gun barrel of someone coming down the stairs saying, freeze or something like that, which is kind of scary when you're staring at someone who's pointing a gun at you until they said police, which gave me a sigh of relief, because I didn't expect the police to shoot me, and of course they didn't. But they took us all in, and in those days, a long time ago, I remember the bail was $100, and it confiscated our money, and it was just like here where, you know, there were no laws about poker, just like there really aren't now, and so my friend who caused us to get in this trouble was a great trial lawyer, and he said, I don't think playing poker in the privacy of our own home is illegal. You know, we're allowed to do that. So he said he wants to fight the case. He didn't want anyone to pay any fines. He said, I'm going to try the case. And he was known as a really good trial lawyer. And the word came back from the sheriff's office. They got the word from, like, upstate Illinois, or maybe the capital of Springfield or wherever. Don't let this go to court, because they didn't think they'd win the case.
Huh.
And so the sheriff told us, that he just straight out told us, he said, just wait till after the election. There was an election coming up in a couple months, and he put in the newspaper how he busted this organized gambling ring or whatever, and they exaggerated even the money they took. Or actually, they underplayed it, which worried me. I thought they were going to only give us back what they stated, because I had the most money that they took. But anyway, they just said, wait till after the election. Well, the election came, the sheriff got reelected, they gave us our money back, and that was the end of it.
Wow. Maybe that's a lesson for an election year coming up next year. After that's over and done with, maybe online poker becomes a reality in 2013, or I'm predicting 2014. Before we let you go, and we've only got about 2 minutes left here, Barry, a listener named George just tweeted to me that he did hear your speech last Tuesday in the Penn & Teller Theater when you were inducted into the Poker Hall of Fame, and he said you said some great things, and I know you also said this in your book, Ace on the River, to young players about college. Can you repeat a little bit of that here for our listeners today?
Sure. What I said was, you know, people are, like, given reasons why I should be in the Hall of Fame. They look at, like, tournaments and stuff or cash games. And you hear people talk about, oh, he gave money away. That means he's a good ambassador. You know, the truth is that when I think of what I've done that would warrant getting me in the Hall of Fame, really I think the best thing I've done is the advice I've given to a lot of college-age kids who are deciding whether to, you know, they're making money playing poker, whether to drop out of school or to continue in school. And, of course, I always tell them, stay in school. Poker's always going to be there. There's no reason you can't play poker part-time, but, you know, and school full-time like I did. I used to play on the weekends. But I always got my work done first. So what I said was, my proudest achievement is when people come up to me, which I have happened more than you would believe, either from other countries writing to me online or coming up to me at a tournament and say, you know, because of you, you know, I took your advice and I stayed in school and I graduated. So, it means a lot to me whenever they come up to me and tell me that. And then what I said is, you know, there are some people who say, hey, you know, the guy should have kept playing poker, he was making money, education's not that important. But I said, to those who disagree, in all the years that I've been doing this, no one's ever come up to me and said, because of you, I stayed in school and it was a mistake.
That says volumes right there. Good advice. Very good advice.
Barry, we appreciate it. Always, you were the first guest on our show, and now you've become the person who's appeared most often on our show as we approach 150 final table shows. We appreciate your work. We're going to link to your speech on YouTube and on Poker Road, and congratulations again on being inducted into the Poker Hall of Fame. It's always a pleasure.
Thanks, Paul. And thanks, Dennis.
The great Barry Greenstein joining us here on the Final Table Poker Radio Show. Dennis, you've got one charity event you want to promote before we go.
Well, I did. I got an email. Oh, if I can find it. Oh, my gosh, I've dropped it. I apologize for that. Son of a gun. There is a tournament coming up this weekend in St. Louis. If I can find it here really quick. And here it is. It's called the All In for, where are we at? Yes. It's the Children's Miracle Network and Cyborgs are great partners with this thing. They're trying to do it on Saturday the 19th. It's called All In for Miracle Texas Hold'em. Again, Saturday the 19th. It's going to be on Cyberg's on Dorset. They're trying to raise money there for the kids. A guy asked if I could promote it real quick. I will not be able to be there. I'll be over in the Hollywood Casino, unfortunately, in Indiana. But it's a simple way to do it. If you go to www.cmn-stl.org, and you can get your seat in advance and get a little discount and go there and, you know, have some fun and make some new friends.
All right, we're all out of time. He's Dennis Phillips in Las Vegas. I'm Paul Harris in the Poker Room of Harrah's St. Louis. Join us again next Tuesday at 3 for another edition of the Final Table Poker Radio Show, and get our podcast on the chipleader.com, and, of course, every week here on 590 The Fan KFNS and KFNS.com.